Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced 5 years, and together we have an amazing adult daughter. And I'm back with my dear friend, Olga, from season one. Hey, Olga.
Yay. Hi. I am back. I am very excited to be here. So I am Olga, and I was in a relationship for about a year. We did not know that we were in a neurodiverse relationship until some months into the relationship, and then it was very clear to me, not so clear to him, and the story changes throughout the years until today. So I am happy to be able to share some of those experiences.
Awesome. And we've learned so much from all the men that we've dated since we started the podcast 3 years ago, and it's so exciting to learn with every new relationship, how we can grow as individuals, right? And how we can see our partners differently than the partners that we didn't know were neurodivergent for a while. And one of the things that we've realized over the years is that oftentimes in relationships, period, but definitely in neurodiverse relationships, it can be a challenge to fully accept and see each other the way we are, right? As our authentic selves. And part of that has to do with, you know, we hide our authentic selves sometimes in the beginning of the relationship. But you want to talk a little bit about what you're...
But I think it's because we hide it since very little. Like we don't feel like we go through school and watching and listening to the story of the people who have gone through my life that I think they are on the spectrum. Going back to infancy, going back to childhood, to school, to a lot of things that happened to them, how awkward they felt through life and how like they felt they didn't know how to act or react or what to say in certain things or understand people or dynamics. It was like, I didn't understand why people got jealous of how good I was playing the guitar. And then they were not giving me jobs because, or this or that, like, I don't understand why people get jealous and then do things, bad things to other people trying to gain power or, you know, different things like money or make more money or and just walk over people because they don't understand how envy works or how, you know, they're going through life through so many things in feeling like I don't understand the world and the world doesn't understand me. They don't see me and I don't see them. I don't really relate to them. And it takes me back to that relationship I was talking at the beginning where I was going through a lot of physical pain. And then towards the end of the relationship, there were things that were fixated in his mind that hurt him of what I did or how I behaved or reacted to things. And they were very related to me recovering from a major surgery and after a car accident. And a lot of things were going on at that time in my life. And it only was after maybe a couple of years of him going through pain and experiencing how hard it was to go through life and continue, you know, your everyday life, going to work, coming back, doing your laundry, you know, doing the normal things you do at home and at work and with pain. It's like, oh my God, now I see you. Now I see how you were feeling and understand what you were feeling when you were going through pain. And I remember how hard it was for you to even sit on the couch. Because I would go into like acute pain when I was trying to get on the couch just to watch TV. And it was excruciating pain, and I will be screaming. He'll be like frozen, like looking at me like, what do I do? And I had to like comfort him, and I'm like, it's okay, I'll manage it, because I know what is going on and why it's hurting. I'll sit down at some point. Yeah. But he couldn't relate to that. And then when he experienced it, he was like, I am so sorry. Like, it, and it was like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years later after we broke up, but because we kept being, you know, the friendship, we could come back and kind of elaborate things and analyze things that happened. Then he'll apologize and apologize over and over. And I think he's still apologizing. It's like, I know that I didn't understand what you were going through, but now I understand because I went through it. Mm-hmm. And so I see how hard it is to live life with pain. Now I see you.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a difference how we perceive each other and how it changes the way we love each other in any relationship, I think.
Yeah. I think it's so important. And I think sometimes one of the things that I hear oftentimes is that it's difficult for one or both partners to apologize because they don't think there's anything wrong with their behavior or the way in which they've communicated. And what I feel is really important to share with the listeners is that if your partner says to you that they are hurt or that they're experiencing hurt, it's part of being in a relationship to say, how can I help? What do you need from me? It's part of being compassionate and being loving and being caring. Because even though you may never experience, like in my case, child, or in a woman's case, childbirth, no man, you know, is going to be having a baby unless they're a trans man, but that's a whole other episode. If I'm telling you that I'm feeling emotional pain or physical pain, it's not for you to deny what I'm feeling. It's for you to ask, how can I help and support you? Even though you may never understand what I'm feeling inside my heart, my soul, my brain, my body, that's what good partners do. Yeah. They're there for each other.
Yeah. And right? And going through it with respect and compassion, even though he didn't understand, I can assure you, every single day of that relationship that didn't work, we never disrespected each other in saying anything mean or anything in a bad way that would hurt the other person, even if we didn't understand what they were going through. So because we take it personal, sometimes we don't understand that the other person is just not understanding it. It's not registering. It's mm-hmm. not computing. It's like, yeah. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
It should be this way. And that's how, and they tend to be very, very structured. Like things have, they have a way to think about something. And if it's not that way, it doesn't fit. It mm-hmm. does not, I can't understand it. So then they get overwhelmed and difficult to process all of that. So knowing that's why made the difference at that time, that I knew he couldn't process things the same way I was processing them. So even though it was very painful to let him go to do his own journey, to go into his own journey, to learn what he needed to learn and grow the way he needed to grow. And it took several years for him to come back and say, hey, I am so sorry. Now I understand what happened then. And having, because we treated each other well, now we can come back and say, I'm sorry. And yeah. And that's what makes the big difference. And we're not hurting anymore.
Yeah. And I think what you experienced is not necessarily always the norm, because I think there's oftentimes so much unintentional hurt yeah. that goes on, especially when it's a longer relationship, which was the case in my marriage. Neither one of us ever intended mm-hmm. to hurt each other. I think in 32 years, neither one of us intended to hurt each other, but we did. And so sometimes I realized that there was a difference in the way we thought about things, where my ex was more of a concrete thinker. I remember him saying to me a few years ago that because I had thought about cheating, that as far as he was concerned, I had cheated. I never cheated on him. I would never have cheated on him. And his, what he thought was,
his perception of what you said. It's like, okay, she already did it. She opened her mind to that.
Right.
She's there.
But it's not true. And that black and white thinking can cause, or that concrete thinking can cause, a big divide in neurodiverse relationships. And I don't know, I mean, I know there's no magic wand that I can, you know, put over every single couple and they can resolve that. But I do know one of the things that I tried to do was be curious. I really wanted to understand where that concrete thinking came from. And part of it could be a defense mechanism or a coping mechanism or a way in which, you know, I deal with or he dealt with. Okay, if she thought it, then she might not have valued our marriage or our relationship. But thoughts are not reality. And just because you say something that seems to be concrete and seems to be black and white doesn't mean that that is the way you're going to feel tomorrow, later today, what have you. It's not, life is not black and white. It just isn't. There's a lot of gray and a lot of other colors in it. But I think neurodiverse couples get caught up in that. And once it's been said, it's a done deal. No, because when we are dysregulated and we are angry or we are really passionate about something, we may share something that's coming from a place of, again, either dysregulation or passion that we may feel very differently about tomorrow. And I think there needs to be grace and space for us to be able to change our perspective or our minds without disrespecting our partners. Yeah. And I was guilty of disrespecting my partner over and over, or my ex-husband over and over and over again.
That's what you do when you don't know what's going on the other side. Exactly. And you're expecting the other person to react some way or to do something. And they don't do it. They mm-hmm. don't make the decisions. They don't react the right way. They don't, or the way it's needed for the situation. So it just accumulates. And when you let it accumulate, then at some point, any one of you is going to make a decision or do something that's going to break the other even more, or the relationship even more. And I think the way they think about those things, it gets fixated in their mind. And then at some point they make a decision. And we were talking about those absolute and definitive decisions where they make that decision. There's no way back, because mm-hmm. it has been a pattern of things that I've been thinking about. And then I got here and now this is my decision. And no matter what you say, there's no way back. Mm-hmm. This is my decision and I'm going. And there's like a kind of a not so constructive way to go into that. And there's also a constructive way to go into that way to think and way to get to the decision, make the decision and follow through.
Yeah, and I think those black and white decisions can be made in haste or from a very dysregulated place. And it can be the end of a relationship when there's still opportunity for learning and growing and yeah. forgiveness and change. And I was guilty of this. I mean, when I was ready to separate, I was ready to separate. But I had talked about it probably for about 3 years. The fact of the matter was, I don't think my ex-husband wanted to hear what I was saying because he was comfortable in various ways in our relationship. But I think it's really, really important for both partners to listen to what your partner is saying. And when you don't understand, to ask questions.
Ask questions. I was going to say, asking questions, it has to become the main habit, because that's how you find out if the other person had the intention you thought he had,
right.
or where he's coming from, or how she is thinking about things. And maybe it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that's going on in their mind,
mm-hmm.
either in the neurodiverse divergent or in the neurotypical. It doesn't matter who is going into that cycle of thinking and making those decisions.
Yeah.
So asking questions, like you said before, you have to be curious. Like, where is he coming from? Where is she coming from? Generally, we don't come from a bad place. I mean, we're not bad because we want to be bad and we want to do this to offend or hurt the other person. It's usually that we're mistaken. It's like, I didn't interpret that well, or I didn't, you know, something happened and that took me to have this attitude or this reaction. And so if we have a place where we can ask each other questions and figure out what was going on and understand, then things are going to end up in a very different note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we react rather than respond. Yeah. And there's a big difference, because usually if we're reacting, we're coming from a dysregulated place. If we're responding, we're coming from a calm, probably more respectful, compassionate place. And I also think that a lot of times we're coming from a place of fear. In relationships in general, we're afraid of getting hurt. We're afraid of getting abandoned. And there might be some wounds that we aren't even aware are living in our nervous system and are living in our brains because we never process them fully. And I hear this over and over again from autistic partners, that they were bullied when they were young. And so they never really, really trusted in a way that maybe you and I, Olga, would trust, you know, friends and coworkers and whatever. So they're in that dysregulated state, in a state of either fright or flight. And when you bring that way of thinking and functioning and reacting to your love relationship, it can create so many challenges. I don't think my ex-husband trusted anybody. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he ever fully trusted me. I think sometimes he was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that's not healthy. That's not healthy for anybody.
That's how you go through life. I mean, how are you going to trust people if everywhere, every space you were in, every group of people you were in did not open that space for you, or you felt like you didn't fit, or you just felt awkward. And like, mm-hmm. I don't belong here, and they don't understand me. And if sometimes you hear, I was like making comments that were not like, was like totally out of place, but they just came out. And if we don't understand that, then we will be rejecting that person. And sometimes, well, you understand that, you're like, oh yeah, that's how he is, or that's how she is, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And then you just keep on going and you don't take it personal. The other person doesn't feel out of the group, and then it will not isolate that person. And then that person will make decisions like, I am never going to speak to this person again, or I am never doing this again, and go into a cycle that's going to be negative for that mm-hmm. person. But there is another side to that, where my experience is, you know how there's a lot of addiction when trying to handle, you know, that part where you don't fit, when yep. you feel that you don't fit and you're masking.
Yep.
And then there's a tendency to use either alcohol or drugs mm-hmm. or things that will help you cope with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the experience of being with in this relationship where he was using alcohol for mm-hmm. Many, many years of his life. And then by being curious and asking questions and not judging, but asking questions about why you do it and how you feel about it and the health issues, where do you think they're coming from and where are you with this? Are you giving up on life and you're done with life? And then at some point, all those questions and his own thinking, his own process took him to the place where, you know what? I am doing this to myself, and this is just, I'm not enjoying life. It seems like I'm done with life, but I'm really not done with life. I want to enjoy everything that life is offering right now. And so I am not drinking anymore. And he said that a year ago, and he's still sober.
Isn't that phenomenal? And the more I understand about neurodiversity and the more I read, the more I realize that there are so many neurodivergent folks and specifically autistic folks that are drinking and using drugs and are addicted to other things as a way of coping. And my heart goes out to all those folks that feel the only way to survive or thrive in life or in a relationship is to use drugs or alcohol. The man I dated after my divorce, we dated for almost a year. One of the first things he told me was, I'm a high functioning alcoholic. He was an entrepreneur. He had his own business. And there were some days that he was drinking 20 plus drinks. It was beer and hard alcohol. And his personality didn't really change when he drank. In fact, he probably became more mellow. But I remember when we would go to social events, he would always ask me, is there going to be alcohol? And I would say yes, because pretty much there was at every event. And he would say, then it's no big deal.
Then I'm
Mona,
good.
I'm good. And now I understand that, because he knew he was going to have to socialize with people,
yeah,
or have some, you know, even if it was a simple conversation, maybe not socialize for a long time. And as long as he could have that social lubricant, and he knew it was going to be available to him. And oftentimes he would have three beers or three drinks in a matter of a few minutes, because he knew what he needed for his body to relax and for him to be able to be social and to have those conversations. And, you know, maybe there are other ways of being less socially anxious. Maybe there are other ways of being more comfortable in social situations than having to turn to alcohol or drugs. And that's where a coach or a therapist can be really, really helpful. Somebody who understands neurodiversity.
And that was part of what was very interesting about his process, because he is a musician and he had been, you know, making music with alcohol. So he thought that he could do music and be in parties and do concerts and all of that, because the alcohol was giving him the possibility of doing all those things, coping with the stress of doing things and being exposed to people and things like that. And so the fear was like, oh, what am I going to do now that I decided not to drink? So it was very... it was amazing to go through every challenge that he identified. He was like, okay, so here I go today. Tomorrow, I'm going to have the first concert that I'm going to be sober, and I'm going to be playing and talking to the audience and everything. And that day came and went, and he went through it great. He felt happy. He felt like he could be even more aware of what was going on. He made music as good as he always does. And he was like, oh my God, I can make music without alcohol and it's still as good or even better, because I can enjoy it better and I can be more present. And so now being more present has become a thing. It's like, oh, now I am aware of everything that's happening in a social gathering with my friends, making music. So it became like a thing to go to each one of those events that may trigger the alcohol consumption, to be able to cope with the stress of being, you know, in a social setting or anywhere that could cause that kind of stress. And he went through each one of those tests and came out, you know, winning and doing it the way he wanted to do it. So I was amazed, but at some point I realized that it also had to do with that conviction that he found the day he decided not to drink anymore. And it was so strong and it got so stuck in the brain that now there's nothing. He can serve alcohol. People can be drinking around him. People talk about alcohol. I drink. He makes me drink. And it's like, it's okay. He doesn't feel like he needs to drink because he's so certain of why he stopped drinking. And it's not something heroic or out of the world. It's not. It's just that brain that gets to the conviction, and it just makes so much sense that it doesn't make sense to do the opposite now. So it's amazing. It, like I said, the opposite way, it takes you into a cycle that is frustrating or sad or, you know, negative. And then this other side makes them capable of doing things that many other people don't do. They struggle with a lot of things. They have to get rid of the alcohol in the house, can't have anybody drink around them. And it's a lot, and not to, you know, not to criticize them. They need that. But there's something special about having the brain that can get to the point where it protects you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I also think the fact of the matter is having at least one person that supports you in creating these changes and is going to love you unconditionally is really, really helpful. And I think trusting that there is at least one person who's going to be there for you. Because as you change the way you think or you change habits in your life, it may be difficult at times. You may go backwards a few steps and then go forward one or two steps and backwards and forwards again. But as long as you know that there's somebody that believes in you, in addition to hopefully you believing in yourself, I think most of us can achieve those changes that will make us healthier emotionally, physically, spiritually. But you have to have faith that you can do it and somebody that believes in you.
Absolutely.
That's so important. So we've talked about a few different things that have been important that have helped us understand the men that have entered our lives. And I'm wondering if there's anything else that you have to share before we leave this episode.
I think all that's left today to say is that I feel very privileged and honored to have experienced everything that I have experienced in the last years with you and this journey, understanding ourselves better, mm-hmm. and that way understanding everybody else around us better and healing. And, you know, that has helped the healing process and has opened my eyes to be more mindful of the other person, more compassionate and respectful.
Amen. I couldn't have said it better. I think that, you know, 5 years post-divorce, I am a better partner in every relationship that I've been in. And it's because I understand my own brain and I understand more about my partner's brains. I understand my trauma. I'm always interested in understanding their trauma. And I also really want to focus on, in every relationship, how we can just have fun and enjoy our lives together. You know, that's really, really important, in understanding how we each enjoy life and what brings fun into our lives. Because if you're only focused on the negative and you're focused on, you know, the challenges you have, it's really hard to build a relationship that has fun as a core part of the foundation. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure having another conversation with you and starting this journey with you 3 years ago.
Oh, it's been amazing. And I'm very happy that we got to do that today also. And I hope to come back later.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mm-hmm.